You're listening to the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo, episode 114.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's up, guys? Hey, thanks for joining me on another masterclass here with my man, Matt Garabedian. Guys, just a quick heads up on Matt. Want to give you guys a quick bio so you know who you're going to listen to and why you should listen. Matt operates actually in the Fresno, California area, and he's somebody that a good friend of ours, Matt Evans, DM connected us. And just a really good dude, family guy. He's been in the real estate business for a while now. And you know, he's a licensed broker and he's done all types of real estate transactions from residential, different types of commercial. And he's out in Fresno crushing it, you know. And some of the things that we talked about, I really enjoyed this episode, is, you know, we talked about direct mail, the strategies that are working in today's competitive market when it comes to the direct mail marketing channel. We talked about the importance of KPIs, which are key performance indicators, and which ones you should be tracking. What he's doing in his market, which is very competitive, to stand out from the other competition, and how he's getting a lot of these off-market properties, and a whole lot more. I mean, I don't want to tease you too much with this, but this is an episode I really think you're going to enjoy. Hopefully, you enjoy them all. And again, the challenge I always have for you is just take one idea, one thing that Matt shares with you and implement it in your business. You do that on a weekly basis and you're going to see results in your business. Okay. So I don't want to keep going on here. I want you to jump right into it and let me know your thoughts. I think you're really going to like this one. Matt, how are you, buddy? It's great to have you on the show, man.
Hey, Alex. I'm doing really well. Thank you. And it's great to be here. I'm a big fan of the show.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. And I know we got connected through a mutual friend, Mark Evans, man. He speaks very highly of you. And I know you're doing big things out in your market. So I've been looking forward to this one because I know we there's some similar, you know, we're in a similar business, obviously. I know you wholesale, but you're also involved in multifamily apartment buildings. And so anybody that's been listening to the show knows that that's something I really have my eye on and that I'm focusing on moving forward. So I'd love to maybe start, man, with how, like, what's your business look like today? I definitely want to kind of drill into your wholesaling operation, and then we can kind of get into, I know offline we were talking about some of these apartment units that you've taken down. So I would love to kind of do a deep dive in some of those deals.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to. Awesome. Well, I guess, to answer your first question, I would say that, you know, as of right now, you know, 90-95% of the deals that we do are wholesale. The remaining 5 or 10%, you know, just because of what the market conditions are. And by the way, I'm in Fresno, California, and I operate in basically three counties, Fresno, Tulare, and Merced counties. Okay. Here in the Central Valley of California.
So you're in a pretty hot market there over there, huh?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's definitely, I mean, just as you see, like, all around the country, you know, everyone's saying, well, there's a shortage of inventory and we're seeing prices increasing. And, you know, in Fresno here, I kind of call it like the, you know, California's last frontier, because you still have a lot of, you know, farmland. Like, one of the major, you know, commerce here is agriculture. So we have some of the, you know, huge farmers out here, and we produce a lot of the produce that the world eats. So, you know, there's still a lot of land to build out here. It's not like LA or San Francisco where you see everyone building up. You know, there's still a lot of land out here. And, you know, the prices for California are still relatively affordable. So I think that's only going to last so long, you know, because we know that God only created so much land, and that's people right. Keep producing more babies.
Yeah, that's right. So, very cool, man. So you said about what, 95% of your deals are primarily wholesale deals?
Yeah. And I'd say the other, you know, 5 or maybe 10% recently is, well, you know, I know this is, some people kind of laugh at this, but, you know, this whole term of wholetailing has kind of come up recently. So I've wholetailed a few deals that I felt like I could do, you know, and so that's kind of gotten introduced into our disposition strategy here recently, but we're at the core, I'm a wholesale guy. I've gotten into the fix and flip game, and it's just not my cup of tea. I don't shine in those situations. I get stressed. It's just not my unique ability.
Matt, you and I are cut from the same cloth, because I am I'm right there with you, man. I've done some rehabs in the past, and it's just it's not fun for me, man. I just don't enjoy it. Wholesaling is it's a lot simpler, and we might not make as much as if we did fixing and flipping, but man, give me the 10 to 30 grand now versus the 50 to 60 in 3 or 4 months, you know?
Absolutely. I'm on board with that, and I've said this a few times, and I'm in all day taking the fast nickel and giving up the slow dime, because in my experience, that slow dime can turn into 7 or 8 cents.
Totally, man. Yeah. I don't know. We're on the same page. I completely agree with you. So let me ask you this, man, what's working for you in this kind of market? I know that you've heard the show in the past, and there seems to be a lot of chatter and buzz around, you know, direct mail. It's, I don't know about in your experience, but we're definitely having to spend more money on direct mail to get a deal. Response rates, for us, it's kind of creeping back up around average, which is about 2%. But I talk to a lot of guys across the country, you know, heavy players that you and I both know. And, you know, they talk about 0.5% to 1% response rate. And so don't get me wrong, we're still doing deals with direct mail, and so are a lot of people out there. But it there seems to be more competition, I guess, for lack of a better word. And so I'm curious, you know, since 95% of your deal volumes is wholesale, how are you getting your deals?
Yeah, I'll ride direct mail till the wheels fall off. I'm an old school guy, I guess, in the business, you know, so that's my bread and butter. And I do obviously see where people are coming from, and, you know, it's interesting. My response rates are the same as anyone else. You know, if we use a couple different mail pieces and we split test and we look at what's getting response rates. So, you know, sometimes 2% is good for us, but I mean, we're averaging 1%.
Okay.
But in my market, I'm not really sure exactly what my competition sends out. I mean, I have an idea, but in my territory, you know, we're anywhere from 15,000 to 20,000 pieces a month. So I think that is probably in the top 2, 3, 4, 5 guys in terms of volume.
Yeah, I bet.
And so, you know, that's kept me consistent. And I stick with what I've known to work. You know, I've definitely spent a lot of time, you know, digging into my KPIs and understanding what it takes to do direct mail. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's how I started my business, and that's how I'll continue to do my business. And of course we're in other, you know, sources of trying to find deals, but yeah, at the end of the day, you know, it's direct mail for me.
Okay. And actually, Matt, I'd love to kind of drill down into your direct mail, but just to interject one thing for those of you listening that didn't catch what Matt said when he mentioned KPIs, he's talking about, you know, key performance indicators. So in this business, you need to track and measure all of your numbers. So what's your cost per lead? What's your cost per deal? What's your response rate? How many leads? So all those things you have to track. And I just rattled off like 3 or 4 of the main ones that you want to track. What's your average profit per deal? You know, that's a big one that you want to track. And so that's what a KPI is, a key performance indicator. And why that's important, especially if you're just getting started, is if you're not tracking those KPIs, how do you know what's working, what's not working, what to improve? And so you're probably just flushing a lot of money down the toilet if you're doing marketing campaigns, but you're not tracking some of those numbers. So that's why when like we hit like 3 to 4 different specialty lists, we always have a unique local phone number on our mailer so that when calls come into Podio, everything gets tracked automatically. We know how many leads each campaign is producing. We know the response rate. All that stuff happens automatically. So Matt, I'm sorry, man. I just wanted to kind of throw that in there for the people that might be getting started in this business and they're not exactly sure, you know, what that means and how that works.
Oh, Alex, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you just verbatim hit it on the head. You know, you couldn't have explained it better. And this is something that when I first started learning about KPIs, I admittedly, I kind of brushed it aside only because I think it was a lack of not understanding and how to do it. But anyone out there that's listening that really wants to get a handle on their business and turn their you know, business into a real business, mm-hmm. for lack of better words, I mean, that's where it's at. You have to have data, and data will show where breakdowns are happening. Data will show where you're getting traction. Data will show where you can improve. And so, you know, like, you know, we share that our common friend, Mark Evans, and, you know, Mark says, you know, show me the data, not drama.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's so powerful to me. And when he said that, it's like, you know, the light goes on. And any of us that are aspiring to run a business, you know, as a business owner, a CEO, we want to look at reports that are indicators of our business and how we can improve and tweak and, mm-hmm. and make small changes that will, you know, those small incremental changes, once you have your KPIs down, can mean literally an increase of 10, 15, 20% to your bottom line. So it's huge, guys.
Yeah, no, I piggyback and echo everything you just mentioned, Matt. And so you might be thinking, especially if you haven't done any deals, or maybe you've done a few deals and you feel like you just don't have enough of a sample size, you know, find out what other top wholesalers or investors in your market, find out what their KPIs are. I guarantee you, if they're doing, well, I shouldn't guarantee you, but chances are, if they're doing volume and they've been in this business for a while, they're probably tracking their numbers, or at least they should be. Find out, you know, say on average, how many leads does it take you to get a deal, or what's your average profit per transaction? And just use those numbers as a placeholder until you start to close your own deals. And now you have some deal volume, and now you can go off of your data. So yeah, there's, I can't stress it enough how valuable the data is. So it's not just the leads that come in from the campaigns that we send out, but it's the intel that we can get from that data. I mean, it's powerful if you know how to use it, right? So.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, I think for me, what's been consistent and true, you know, for us, it's for every 50 conversations we'll have, we'll get a deal.
Yeah.
And that's been so consistent that, you know, I know that, okay, I send out X amount of pieces. I know I'm going to get X amount of response rate, and then we're going to have, you know, 50 conversations. Sometimes, you know, depending on if my acquisition guy is on it, you know, maybe he's going to get a deal in the 30th call. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that 50 conversation range is pretty accurate and it's predictable.
And here's an example, and we'll kind of move on to the next point. I don't want to beat this to death, but here's an example of why that's so important. So Matt, in your example, like you mentioned, and one of the things I want to talk about here shortly is, you know, the makeup of your team. But, you know, you mentioned your acquisitions guy, like as an example, you know, if Matt's tracking his numbers, and so he knows that every 50 conversations, you know, they're usually popping off a deal. Well, if he's got that data in his CRM or wherever he tracks it, if after the third month he's noticing that, you know, it's taking 100 or maybe 150 conversations to get a deal, well, now you can start to look at, okay, is it my acquisitions person? Is there something he or she is doing or not doing on the phone? Is there a breakdown in our process and our system? And so it gives you the heads up, the red flag, or it gives you an indication that, you know, maybe you start closing a deal in 20 conversations, right? Or 30 conversations. Now you can start to look at, well, what's working here? Like, how can we double down and kind of press on these efforts, right? So anyway, we don't need to get into more of that, but hopefully we kind of highlighted the importance of making sure that you track your KPIs. But Matt, one thing I definitely wanted to get into is you mentioned you're sending out about 15 to 20,000 pieces a month. What does your team look like? Because chances are, you know, that's a lot of volume for, you know, probably you're not a one-man show, because that would be a lot of leads to process and everything else that goes along with that.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And, you know, just to kind of preface that, the answer to that question. So I got involved with, you know, the guys that we all know together here, and it's been about a year. And so I went out to a deal-a-thon. And it just like blew my mind, right, with how these other guys were structuring their business. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I had two acquisition guys, you know, just starting with me, right? And so I come back from the deal-a-thon, and my my hair is on fire, right? I'm like, this was awesome. Like, I'm going to implement all this stuff. And you know, we were in traction at the time. So we started, you know, gung ho. And the first quarter, we blew the doors off of our projections. And
awesome.
It was like, wow, this was such a breakthrough and amazing. And, you know, I really felt at the time that I had, you know, what I thought could be my integrator and a real kick butt go getter acquisitions guy. And around October of last year, my dad was actually terminally ill, and he passed away in October. So I had a lot of things going on, and the business is I have all these things. I'm running a business. I have goals and, you know, family stuff going on. And unfortunately, my dad passes away, and I'm in the office, and I'm just kind of like, you know, distraught a little bit.
Yeah.
And that same day, actually the day after, both my guys come into the office and they say, just matter of factly, we quit. I'm like, what? Like totally out of the blue. I'm like, wow. Well, I don't understand. And, you know, not to get into details, but basically they saw, you know, what kind of numbers my organization and what I've built kind of start producing. And they felt basically bottom line that they wanted to go out and compete against me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, these were young guys. This is probably their first, you know, experience in real estate. They made a little bit of money and they felt like, well, Matt just showed us the keys to the kingdom. Let's just go out and make the lion's share of the money instead of getting, you know, a percentage or whatever it was I was paying them. And mm-hmm. and my opinion, they were being paid well. And so that hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
You know, to be honest with you, it set me back. And so I kind of like, you know, went into a mode of thinking about how to restructure my organization and my team, and really thought about some of the mistakes I made. And of course, you know, Mark was there and just, you know, was invaluable for me at that time, and kind of just walked me through that, Matt, like, this is totally normal.
Yeah.
You know, as a business owner, you're going to have these ups and downs periods, and it's going to push you through and get you to the point where you're going to have, you know, a much better resolve coming out of it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I kind of took my time, Alex, you know, from October till the early part of this year, really trying to find someone that's going to really fit my culture and understand where I was coming from. And so at this point, you know, I have what I believe now will be my COO and my integrator. And I have now a transaction coordinator. And I'm now talking to another guy that I believe will be, you know, the third part of my team, which will probably, he'll start in the acquisitions role. I still sit in the dispositions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ideally in my mind, you know, I have probably, including myself, probably a 4 or 5 man team, which will, you know, make me whole. And I think that we can operate at a very high level. We're operating at a high level right now. But I think with that put together, it's going to take me to the next level.
Yeah, man, I have no doubt. And just to, I don't want to gloss over it. I think I speak on behalf of everybody that's listening is, you know, our sincere condolences, you know, on the passing of your father. I can't imagine what kind of impact that may have had on you. And then on top of that, you know, to get that news, it's, man, it's a testament to you. I know we don't really know each other that well. And you know, we have spoken on the phone a few times and you seem like a really good dude. And so I kind of tip my hat to you, man. I want to recognize you for getting through that adversity. And, you know, it kind of reminds me, and I forgot who told me this. I want to say it was like one of my first mentors back in the day. You know, he said something along the lines of your greatest opportunities are going to come from some of your biggest challenges. And that kind of always stuck with me. And that's, so as you were telling your story about, you know, your dad and then your guys leaving you just kind of like high and dry with like no heads up, that quote kind of came to mind, because it's an opportunity to kind of look in the mirror and, you know, how can you use that adversity in your favor, and how can you learn from it? So, and this is like Mark said, man, this is going to happen. it's going to happen to you again. It's going to happen to me again. It's not going to be the first or the last time. If, you know, anybody listening in, you're going to have these struggles and these challenges in your business. And don't get me wrong. You know, sometimes it's a kick in the pants and, you know, you get down and you can't breathe. But, you know, as cliche as it may sound, you just got to get back up and keep going, you know?
Well, I appreciate the kind words and thank you very much. And, you know, I have just speaking really quickly on growing the team. I have two words to tell you. It's Colby Index.
Oh, yeah.
I actually listened to that with the one you did with Chris Chico.
Yeah.
And I was blown away and amazed at the same time. So, you know, that was big time golden nuggets. And that's really helped me, you know, identify who I'm looking for now and a great predictability of what I can expect. So,
right.
Yeah, man, this we're entrepreneurial, you know, and this is who we are. And another thing that I've heard that really speaks to who we are and what we do and our story is they say, you know, your mess is your message.
That's awesome.
You know, and I really, that resonates with me. Right. Cause yeah. You know, every guy that I know that's been doing big things or been successful and doing, you know, just really awesome stuff, man, we've all come through adversity. Mm-hmm. I don't know too many guys that, you know, were just rolled out of bed and, you know, didn't get their share of bumps and bruises and defeats and, you know, just rode a streamlined straight up.
Matt, I don't think that exists. And if it does, I don't know that person. So
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I take these things and I use them and that's my why, you know, in terms of who I am, what I want to be, what my vision is. Mm-hmm. And so I take these things in stride and I learn from them and I use it as future ammunition and growth. That's what drives me. That's what has me, you know, listening to podcasts, you know, relentlessly and leveling up when I can and joining masterminds and getting around guys that can relate and speak to the same experiences we go through because it's something that I'm trying to work on, but it's an emotional roller coaster. So yeah,
totally.
If you could figure out how to, you know, somewhat smooth that out as you go and learn to enjoy the ride, then you put things in a perspective.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. I mean, you talked about that period where, you know, you had your guys kind of just leave. And so what was the biggest lesson or the biggest takeaway that you can share with the audience that can help them, you know, that if they're in a similar position, maybe they have a team right now, maybe they're thinking of building a team. What would you say is like the big one or two things that you took away from that experience of those people, you know, just quitting on you and then you mentioned how it kind of set you back. What would you have done different and what were some of the takeaways that you can share?
Well, what I would have done differently is, you know, it's kind of, you don't know what you don't know. And so I probably would have, you know, been thorough in understanding some of these assessments out there. And instead of just kind of winging it and trusting my instinct, because that could sometimes be wrong, I would have done some more research on how to properly hire these types of roles for our business. Mm-hmm. Instead of just, you know, going for it. And, you know, by the way, I'm a 6'3", 8'3". So, you know, I gather the data, but I don't really process it too much. Yeah. And then, you know, I'm a quick start at an 8. So I tend to jump into things and figure it out. Right.
That's great. And let me just interject, Matt, for those of you listening, if you haven't, I want to encourage you, if you haven't checked out that episode I did with Chris Chico on Colby, Colby is basically, it's not a personality test. It basically tells you what your MO is, how you operate, you know, how you tick and how you're wired. And so it's a 36 or 37 question. You answer most likely or least likely or something to that effect. And at the end, it gives you a 4-digit score. And we won't get into the details of that. But if you want to find out how that works, definitely listen to that episode. Go to flipempire.com/episode102. And definitely, even if you don't have a team, take Colby yourself and you're going to learn a lot about yourself. So, yeah, Matt, I appreciate you sharing that because you know, I feel like I'd kind of be burying the lead, so to speak, to have you talk about, you know, a big challenge you have. But, you know, most importantly, how can we kind of learn from that and avoid that in the future, you know?
Yeah, I think that's probably the best approach, just to have some type of system in place to have, you know, that initial interview and understand the potential hire and where they're coming from. But I mean, the biggest takeaway for me was, you know, I was worried at the time when it happened that, oh my God, you know, I opened up all of my secrets. I opened up my business. I just trained my competition. And I didn't even know that that would be something that they would do. And I was a little worried about that, to be honest with you. And then I sat back and, again, having more discussions with Mark and other guys that I respect in the industry, you know, Mark just pretty much came out and said, dude, those guys are going to be out of the business in 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I don't really know what they're doing. And it's not none of my business, but the truth of the matter is, any of you guys out there that are sitting in this visionary role or a CEO, we're a different breed, right? I mean, yeah. everyone wants the fruits of the labor, and everyone wants to have that position, but only a certain amount of people can write those checks to keep the business going.
Totally.
Can write checks when the marketing campaign falls through the ground and the response rate doesn't come through and you don't get a deal, but you've got, you know, expenses that need to be paid. You've got deals that need to be funded. You've got rehabs that need to be funded. You've got you're constantly wearing different hats. You're a relationship guy. So it's a totally different world when you're sitting on this side of the desk as opposed to, you know, being an employee. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to look at the owner and say, man, this guy is making some big profit. You know, why can't I have that?
Yeah.
But no, you can. But you know, it doesn't happen, and certainly it doesn't happen in 6 months. I didn't get to this point by overnight, right? Mm-hmm. This has been a long road for me to get here, and you know, I now I'm at the point of like, bring it on. You know, I don't know too many other guys that are going to be able to sustain a business, and yeah. So I have confidence in that, and you know, I stay in my lane and I continue to do what I do, and you know.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Man, I love that mindset, and I'm right there with you. You know, when I was considering launching a podcast about a year and a half ago or so, I ended up launching a little over a year ago. You know, part of it was, and this wasn't a big part of it, but it crossed my mind like, oh, there's going to be, you know, other people in my market. Because if I was going to do it, I was going to share everything I do, like the ins, the outs. I was going to get people on. And I just wanted to put out good content and good value. And I didn't, if I was going to hold back, I just wasn't going to do it. So when I made the decision I was going to do it, it crossed my mind for a second that, you know, well, other people in my market are going to hear this. And then I quickly remembered, who cares? There's so much opportunity out there. You know, we can put all the valuable content out there possible. We can like map out just our action plan, right? We can, our playbook. And people still have to go out there and do it. And it's difficult to do what we do. So if somebody wants to go out there and replicate or duplicate your business or your systems, you want to know what? God bless. Like, move forward. Yeah. And who knows, maybe there's opportunities for, you know, for business with that person in the future. And so you got to really monitor your thoughts and your belief system and your thought patterns to make sure that you're not falling into that scarcity mentality or like, I don't want to share my secrets because they're going to go around and I'm training my competition. Be careful, because I've been there before, and I years ago, I changed my mindset on that, and it kind of just frees you up to just operate. And I think that goes, you know, right in line with what you were sharing.
Yeah. I mean, if we can operate from that abundance mentality, you know, there's so much business, there's so much money, there's so many opportunities out there. You know, like they say, the world is your oyster. So, you know, if you can operate from that level and at the same time, you know, just stay grounded and be appreciative of where you're at, regardless of where you're at, mm-hmm. then it's all good. You know, yep. I think it's, you know, there's so much out there. It's limitless.
That's cool, man. So let me pivot here and kind of circle back around, you know, to your direct mail marketing. would you say that most of your deals, I know you're doing about 95% wholesale deals, are most of those deals coming from the direct mail marketing channel? Or, and I'm sorry if you covered that, I can't recall, but I wanted to circle back to that because I kind of want to drill into your, you know, like what list you're hitting, how often, like I want to get into some of those details.
Yeah. We touched on it briefly, but let's dive into it a little deeper. So yeah, I mean, direct mail is my, you know, bread and butter. And I would say, you know, predominantly high equity, non-owner occupied. So okay. I come across tired landlords, people that, you know, moved out and do not want to be renting it anymore, maybe problem tenants, repairs that are, you know, too big for them to handle. You know, that would be our main, what I see our main source of deals. You know, we get deals for people that, you know, are downsizing and can't or don't want to maintain a bigger house. You know, various, I mean, as you know, there's various reasons why people, you know, end up selling. I don't get into really any NOD at all.
Okay. That's note for those of you listening, that's that notice of default is what he, basically, you know, people that are, you know, not making their mortgage payments.
Right. Right. A little bit of probate. We've done probate deals.
So yeah, it sounds like primarily it's, you're talking about, you know, non-owner ocs, absentee.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's our niche.
Okay.
And so, you know, I drive leads off of, you know, the internet too. And, you know, I have a good SEO guy, great SEO guy that's been with me since the beginning. And so I'm organically, you know, you type in those keywords, my, you know, my business is, you know, usually number one or number two in my market on a organic search and some pay-per-click and, you know, some Facebook retargeting. You know, we do a mixture, but again, you know, like I said, I'm a ride or die guy for direct mail.
Yeah. That's cool, man. So these 15 to 20,000 a month, do you typically space it out where you might send out, you know, 3 to 5,000 a week, or do you just kind of do, you lock and load and you drop 15, 20 in one shot and then just take all the leads as they come in?
No. We'll space it out.
Yeah. You'll drip it.
I just found that, you know, doing a one drop at once will just stress out my acquisitions guys, cause we'll just get a flood of calls into the system. And, you know, it just, you know, it takes 15, 20 minutes to, you know, break down a lead and pull a tax record and get a CMA or a comp. And I like my guys to go into the call with some basic knowledge of the property, you know, instead of just jumping in and asking questions that we could find out ourselves. Mm-hmm. So if you look at, you know, what it takes my guy per lead, and he's getting inundated and it'll stress them out. So I like to try to space it so that, you know, they have time to, you know, take in the lead, then figure out, okay, this is going to be, you know, a hotter priority based on how the conversation went. This is more of a follow-up. This is more of a long-term follow-up. So they're pretty good at organizing and being systematic in how they're approaching the leads that are coming in.
Okay. And are you guys taking your acquisitions team, are they taking the calls live, or are you like driving it to a recording and then calling them back?
We do two things. So, you know, if we want to test a new piece or a new list, we'll run it through call rail to a voicemail. And that way we can track the results. Other times, if I'm, you know, going to go with another route, I have a live answering 24-hour answering service.
Okay.
So the answering service will take the call live, and then they'll put in the basic information we ask them to gather. And then they'll, you know, through a web application, drop the lead right into Podio for us.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the two different ways that we take the initial lead.
Okay. Understood. So having said all this, man, I know direct mail is your bread and butter. Is there, are there any tips or anything you can share as far as, you know, people that are going out there and either are already mailing or people that want to start mailing? What would you say is kind of the big thing, the one thing they need to know as far as direct mail is concerned and trying to get deals and leads and generate leads in this kind of market?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things, my opinion on it. Number one, I mean, everyone's heard this, but you've got to be consistent, right? Don't send, you know, one campaign to one list. And
Matt, I don't even know if you know this, but I was leading you there and I was hoping you'd use the word consistent, because for me, that's the main thing. Like anybody, sure. Anytime anybody asks me, I'm like, consistent, just be consistent. Even if you got like a crappy piece and you don't have a great, like, just be consistent. So I'm glad. I wasn't sure if you were going to go there, but I didn't mean to kind of steer your thunder, but I'm glad that you jumped in there and said that.
Yeah. I mean, it's proven, right? And we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. If you look at any information or technique on a direct mail campaign, the key is consistency. And be, you know, the thing that you have to remember is, you know, sitting in our side of the deal, we're always ready to buy a house. I'm mm-hmm. always ready to talk to someone about buying their house. Well, we're sending out a message that maybe the homeowner, it's not the right time for them. Yeah. These people have lives, they have jobs, they have life events, they have things going on. So they're not always thinking about selling their house. Mm-hmm. But if you're consistent and your message is consistent, when that particular time comes for that homeowner to make a decision or to start thinking about selling, you've been in front of them so many times that more than likely you're tipping the odds in your favor that you're going to be one of the, maybe the first call, or at least a call that they're going to make.
Bingo. Bingo. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's
yeah. Yeah. And I spoke about this on a recent episode, but it's, you know, basically what you're talking about is top of mind awareness. It's constantly staying in front of your prospect. And Dan Kennedy, who's a marketing genius, always talks about, you know, entering the conversation your prospect is having in their mind. And that essentially is what your marketing is aimed and is supposed to do. It's, you know, you want to craft the right message to the right market at the right time. And so marketing is, man, we can get off on a whole nother tangent on marketing, but that's the, you know, it's a people business we're in, but it's also a marketing business. If you're not marketing, you know, you're not doing deals. That's for sure.
Yeah. I like to think it is like we're professional marketers and real estate just happens to be what we're, the product we offer.
That's right. No, that's exactly it, man. So let me ask you this. I wanted to kind of, and we don't have to, because I know I want to kind of keep it short here. But as far as multifamily is concerned, I know that, you know, we were talking offline and you mentioned that I think it was like a 17 or an 18 unit building that you guys ended up taking down. Can you talk about that deal? Like, at what point how did that deal come across your desk? How'd you end up taking it down? And maybe we can kind of do a little bit of a case study on that one.
Sure. That deal actually came through a referral. And the way that came about was, you know, I was in the property. I owned a property management company for many years and actually just sold that at the beginning of this year. And so at the time when I'm growing my management business, you know, part of that deal is, you know, eviction. So, you know, I had one person that specialized in evictions and she wasn't a real estate agent or anything. So from time to time, you know, she would do an eviction and talk to these stressed out owners. And so one day, you know, she called me and she says, these people, you know, have a bad situation going on. It's, you know, their apartment building is full of non-paying tenants and not so nice people. And they're just in a bad shape. And so, you know, I told her I buy property. So anytime, you know, she ran across someone that wanted to sell to, you know, give me an idea or give me a referral. And of course we'd compensate her for that. So, you know, she gave me the referral and I called this person and it was a young lady that, lived out of town. And her father had purchased that property as a retirement,
okay,
and an investment, but they were, you know, out of town owners. And, you know, they had another sibling that basically the father gave kind of the reins to manage it. And they just were not, you know, up to the challenge and they just made very, very poor decisions and essentially ran the property into the ground, both with filling it with really bad tenants and just dropping the ball on the maintenance and then falling behind on their mortgage payments and their taxes. So essentially they were in an NOD situation and she calls me and says, you know, my father just kind of threw his hands up in the air and is ready just to take, you know, a loss and be done with it. And if there's any way that he could salvage something out of it, then he'd be willing to sell.
Okay.
So, you know, so I immediately, you know, looked at, okay, well, here's some of the options that we could do. And, you know, we were kind of racing against the clock because it was, you know, headed to that foreclosure stage. And so, you know, by asking, you know, some questions, I was able to identify some of the key points in the deal. So, you know, one of them was that they had really a mortgage that was a really good deal. I mean, it was a very low interest rate. The principal balance was, you know, low based on what I thought the value of the property was. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of just approached them and I said, look, you know, I could come in and take you out of the notice of default and get you current. I could come in and pay your property taxes current and get you, you know, kind of squared away with some of the vendors that you owe money to. And then I'll take over all of the problems and then give you cash, you know, at closing so that your dad can salvage some of his retirement and not lose everything, because essentially that's where it's headed. And so I presented the structure of a subject to. So I don't know if your listeners are familiar with that. I'm sure you are. Yeah. But essentially subject to is, you know, we take title subject to the existing mortgage.
That's right.
And so what's important with the way that's structured is you want to make sure that, you know, it's a good loan, that the principal balance is, it's got equity in it, right? You don't want to take over something that's underwater. You know, the terms of the loan are favorable, you know, the interest rate's good and the payments is good. So it was one of those deals where like everything lined up perfectly. And I had a motivated seller that was willing to, you know, I call it it's a partnership at that point, because we're basically accepting title and they're keeping the loan in their name. So there's gotta be a, you know, a rapport built and a
for
trust,
sure. Yeah.
Letting them know that we're not gonna, you know, just take this property and then not pay your mortgage, because we have skin in the game. We have a financial interest. So I'm gonna send you proof every month that I made these payments on time. And my exit strategy is either I'm gonna, you know, sell it, I'm gonna refinance it and get your name off the loan, sell it, get your name off the loan, or continue down this line if you're comfortable with it, and just continue to make those payments based off of, you know, the rents that we receive.
Yeah.
So they accepted the terms of the deal. So essentially, you know, we got into the deal with a little less than like 50 grand coming in, paying the current mortgage current, the taxes current, and some of the vendors being paid off, and then giving them what essentially worked out to about $20,000 to $25,000 in cash.
Wow. And this was an 18 unit property, you said, right?
Yeah, 18 okay. units.
And was this being occupied? Like, was it performing at this point? Was it occupied? And
it was occupied, but I would say, well, no. Let me retract that statement. There was probably six vacants, and out of the remaining 12 tenants, I would say there was paying. And so we had to basically go in and stabilize the tenant base and yeah. go in and do rehab. So that's where most of the money we invested into the rehab. We put in about $100,000 and we basically did a huge facelift on the complex, and, you know, everything from, you know, new wrought iron fencing, landscaping, exterior paint, to rehabbing pretty much all of the interiors of the units, and then slowly re-tenanting the place to market rents, finding good tenants to, you know, occupy the building. And so after it was all said and done, we were into the deal, I'd say, for, you know, just under $600,000 with acquisition and rehab. We held the property for a total of 14 months. And then sold it on that 14th month, just over $1 million.
Wow, that's awesome. So what, you guys profited about, what, 500-600 grand?
Yeah.
That's amazing, man. That's a home run of a deal.
It was, and you know, we all talk about, you know, that one deal out there. For any of you guys listening, we're one deal away from changing your life, and that really changed my business, my personal life. I mean, that kind of was the springboard into me being able to get going and grow.
That's amazing, man. That's an incredible deal. And so let me ask you, was there ever any consideration, Matt, to keeping that deal, you know, as a wealth builder? As I mean, it's don't get me wrong, it's difficult to pass up a $300K payday in a 14-month turnaround. But did you guys, I was just curious if you and your partner ever considered holding on to that one?
Yeah, you know, that definitely was the intention going in. And let me tell you guys something about the subject too. So, you know, there is some risk involved when you take a deal subject to, meaning there usually could be a due on sale clause in the lender's, you know, note. And so what a due on sale clause is, if title is transferred without the lender's consent, then they can immediately call the loan the entire principal balance due and payable.
That's right.
And when this deal went down, I wasn't in a position, financially speaking, to, you know, cash it out or refinance it. So I had to bring in, you know, a partner that had, you know, a much stronger, you know, financial statement, and it was in a much better position than I was. And so, you know, you have to have an exit strategy in mind, because if, you know, I haven't seen that happen, but it's possible. So if that due on sale clause was called, you know, that's kind of why I was thinking I need to have someone that has the, you know, the firepower to either cash it or quickly refinance it. So, you know, that was something that I had to take into consideration. But at the time, the reason that we did sell it was, you know, and this goes back to more of my past, and, you know, I have a lot of trials and tribulations in my life, but, you know, as a young guy, I lost my first house to foreclosure.
Okay.
And so that put me behind the eight ball in terms of getting to buy, you know, my house. And so at the time, we were living in a beautiful house that we were renting, and the landlord told us, hey, we're gonna sell. We'll give you the right to, you know, have the first option to buy it. So it kind of put me under the gun. And in my area, I was only able to qualify for an FHA financing at the time due to the, you know, the foreclosure restriction, and conventional says 7 years before you can get a conventional. So in my market, you know, we had to the max loan amount for FHA was like 274. Or something, and the house that we wanted to buy was a little over 400. So I had to come in with the cash, the difference.
I see.
And so my partner was really cool. Like, you know, he understood that I had to solidify my family and my you know, where my kids are and my wife. And so it was something that I needed to get done, unfortunately, and from just, you know, a mistake that, you know, I made back 7 years ago, wherever it was. And it just happened to be that, you know, that time came and I had the ability to cash out. So that's what I did. You know, now in where I'm at now, I definitely would have kept it. But, you know, we live and learn, and you know, I'm thankful to even have that opportunity to be able to do that. You know?
That's exactly. So, yeah, no, that's exactly right. And so there's obviously no right and wrong answer, because, you know, like if you were to find that opportunity today, you know, you might be at a different point in your life where maybe it makes sense to hold on. But back then, you know, selling it was the right thing. And I'm with you. I've been in similar situations, and where I, you know, I got a property under contract, and I'm like, man, this would be a great property to cash flow. And I ended up wholesaling, right? For one reason or the other. And so there's no right or wrong. I think it's just having a lot of self-awareness, I think, is, you know, is a big component of being successful in life and in business, and understanding where you are in your life, understanding what you want, you know, your family's needs, et cetera. And that can kind of guide you, you know, especially if you have faith and you act, that can guide you in the right direction, I think, most of the time. So, that's awesome, man. And then for you, man, like you said, that was kind of a big springboard to really help you in your business, right?
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, that deal was, man, we're going on about 3 years now since that went down. So, you know, the market was different then. And, you know, it took me to the point of, you know, having the ability now to, you know, pump more money into my marketing campaigns, mm-hmm. to, you know, look at expanding my business, look at being able to hire people, you know, just give me a little bit more breathing room and flexibility and take the stress level down, because we're all grinding and we're all trying to, you know, reach goals and be as best as we can. But, you know, when you have, you know, bills that are due and stress, that sometimes clouds your judgment and makes you kind of, you know, not be patient and make decisions that you may not have done if things were different. So
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, it's all a learning curve, and, you know, we all go at our own pace. And, you know, again, I really believe we're all one deal away from, you know, changing our lives and our business. And, you know, you're in this game long enough, I think we're all going to have our fair share of those home runs. I look for those every day.
That's but, awesome. I love you that. Know, I appreciate you sharing that. That might even be the title of this particular podcast, that we're all just one deal away from changing our lives. And it's so true. And yeah. if you internalize that and you believe it, which you should, then that kind of should give you the fuel and the motivation to keep going, especially if you have a strong why and you understand why it is that you're doing what you're doing. So, Matt, that's awesome, man. I really enjoyed this episode. This is one question you've probably heard me ask in the past. And so I never prep the guest, because I just want kind of the real authentic answer that initially comes to mind. But, you seem like a young guy, but kind of rewind the clock 10, 15 years, knowing what you know now, what's the one piece of advice that you would give yourself?
One piece of advice that I would give myself would be to, you know, cut the learning curve as quick as possible and invest in your education, invest in a mentor or a coach, because you can essentially cut out so many mistakes and so much time. You can essentially bend time by getting quality mentorship and guidance and coaching, so that you can accelerate your growth, you know, very, very quickly.
That's awesome, man. That's actually one of mine. You know, people come to me, and one of the questions I'm often asked, especially when I do podcast interviews, is like, what's one of the biggest mistakes I've made in my career? And it was waiting 2 years before I actually like ponied up and, you know, paid for a coach. And there's so much money I could have kept in my pocket, the stress and headaches I could have avoided, and just like you said, cut the learning curve. And so I hope people aren't jaded these days, because there's so many coaching programs out there and there's so many gurus and, you know, people putting out content. And so I think we live in an amazing time where there's so much free, valuable content information. Like, there's several great podcasts out there. I think a challenge, Matt, for a lot of people is trying to figure out who's the real deal, who they're going to listen to. And so many people just kind of get infected by the shiny object syndrome. And they bounce around from guru to guru and strategy to strategy, and it ultimately holds them back. So that's why I really like your answer, man. If you could just find one person that resonates with you, that is at a place in their life where you'd like to be, and somebody that can help you shorten the learning curve, then dive right in. Like, if you're going to end up doing it anyway and you're seriously committed to this business, why wait? Especially if you can do it. And if you can't do it, find a way to do it, right? Because the other school of thought, and I'll kind of end on this, is you might not be able to afford to pay for a coach or a mentor, but think about this. Can you afford not to pay for a coach or a mentor? So kind of, you know, shift the framework and think about it from a different angle. And then sometimes that could just, you know, give you the decision that, you know, you need to make. So Matt, man, awesome. Where can people connect with you, man? I really appreciate you sharing everything you did. If people want to reach out to you, maybe there's joint venture opportunities to do deals in your market or other markets that you might be looking to do deals in. What's the best way to connect with you?
Yeah. The best way to connect with me I've got a Facebook page. You can find me at Phenom Investor on Facebook. That's PHENOM Investor. And the same handle on Instagram. So I try to post some content and some updates on what I got going on. And, you know, I'm more of a, I guess, a lifestyle type investor. You know, I like to, you know, show how we could build businesses and enjoy, you know, time with our families as well, and enjoy the things that we like to do. But yeah, I'm interested in connecting with anybody and everybody out there that, you know, is in the business. You know, we've got an event coming up here in my area in August 31st and September 1st. I'm doing an event with Don Costa. I believe he's been on your show.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been on his show as well. Good guy.
Yeah, yeah. So he's talking about, you know, putting together, a 100 house a year flipping business. And, you know, by the grace of God and through hard work and everything, I'm running a 7-figure wholesaling business now. So we're going to open up, you know, kind of the same format that I've been a part of, we call it the next level immersion. So if anyone's interested in hearing more details about that, you know, we're going to, you know, rock it for 2 days and bring in guys that want to learn how to elevate their business.
That's fantastic, man. I love what you're doing, man. Keep crushing. I'm glad that Mark, you know, linked us up, and, you know, we definitely got to stay in touch. So appreciate you sharing everything you did. And guys, I definitely want to encourage you. Here's what I'd end on. I know this show has kind of gone on a bit longer than they normally do, but I know hopefully you've gotten a lot of value out of this. If there's something that just struck a chord with you, something that you're not doing that you think would work in your business, you won't know until you put it into action. So just take one thing. That's all I ask. You know, Matt's not getting paid to do this. Matt does this because, you know, he enjoys the business. It's obvious he likes helping people. Otherwise, he wouldn't be donating an hour of his time here. So give us the gift of just going out there and implementing at least one strategy that you may have heard today. Or maybe it's not something that you heard for the first time, but sometimes it's about hearing something in a particular way from a particular person, what that gets you to kind of get up off your ass and do something. So that's really what I want to hopefully motivate and inspire you to do, is just take one thing that we may have shared with you, implement it in your business. And if it doesn't work, you know, keep kind of tweaking and keep going at it. I think the operative word here is you got to be consistent, not only in your marketing, but the type of action that you're taking on a daily basis. So Matt, again, man, I think we'll end the show on that, but appreciate your time, buddy.
Alex, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Awesome, man. I'll catch you guys in the next show.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.